morning. Welcome to the Bell and Pollock Legal Show, the only show of its kind. I'm Brad Pollock. Bob Leonard's in studio with me today. Gary Bell's out of town. 4th of July weekend. Welcome, welcome, welcome. Pull up your as Gary would say, your chairs, get your legal bagel and your cup of coffee and be ready to go. We're Bell and Pollock. We've been doing this show for years. This is your chance to call in and get some free information, find out what you need to know about what's going on in your life or somebody else's life that you might want to help as far as legal matters that might be going on. Talk a little law. We talk about anything you want in this station or during this next hour. You bring it up, we'll talk about it, except politics. We don't talk politics. We're a legal show. We talk about law. We talk about legal matters in our real lives. In our regular legal lives, we're personal injury lawyers, Bell and Pollock. We've been around for about 35 years now. How long have you been with us, Bob?
About 12 years.
Bob's been with us 12 years. We do work comp cases. We do premises liability cases. We do car accident cases, car crash cases. We'll help you if you've been hurt. We give you a legal game plan. You can call us at 303-795-5900 for your legal help. Somebody's been making a big deal out of it lately, but I think for at least 10 years, Bob, haven't we been 24/7 as far as an answering service and people answering the phones? And
we're there all the time, Brad.
The calls coming through.
We answer the call. We'll be there. Someone will get the call. And
you know, here's the way it works. People during the work hours, everybody's there during the off hours. You got an answering service. If it's an emergency or something that needs to be done, you get the call.
We'll meet you on weekends too. If you can't make it during the week. Yeah. Meet you on a Saturday or Sunday.
You call us on the weekends, and we just go for it. That's it. So it's something that's available to you. You can give us a call and talk to us whenever you need to. We give you a legal game plan. We give you a free consultation when you come in. We will tell you what your case is, how your case needs to be handled, but we can't tell you what your case is worth on the first visit. Sometimes we can give you an idea, but we can't tell you for sure which case is worth because, folks, there's a lot more to it than just saying, oh, come in and we'll tell you which case is worth. We're going to talk to you. We're going to hear what your side of the story is. We're going to find out the other side of the story. We're going to tell you how you need to proceed with your case, give you an opportunity as to whether or not you want to hire a lawyer and what you want to do. This is a weekend where there's drunk driving. People are going to be drunk driving. We've handled many, many cases against drunk drivers who've been hurt as a result of a drunk driver.
Hey, you know, Brad, it's 4th of July. Watch out for those fireworks. Lots of people get hurt. Don't hold those Roman candles in your hand because they can blow up.
Right, and there's responsibility and liability people have for that kind of stuff too. And once again, we do cases and we help people and we do our cases and we go to trial many times. But sometimes it's not, you don't need to go to trial. Sometimes you get it resolved without. So I don't want you thinking that, oh, it's a big deal because somebody goes to trial a lot. You've got to watch and see what's best for your client, what's going on. We're gonna go to the phones. We're going to talk to Martin about a personal injury question. Martin, how you doing, buddy?
Oh, hi, guys. Hi, Bob.
Hey, Martin.
Hey, I have a question regarding personal injury. If a person's injured in a car accident or any kind of personal injury where there's liability that's not attached to the injured party, the people that care for him, like family members, is there much weight given to the impact of those people terms of recovery?
You know, Martin, there is in our personal injury packet. When we have somebody come in, we sit down and talk to them. We ask them for what we call people who we ask them for the names, addresses, phone numbers of people who are helping them, who do take care of them, and also for what we call before and after. Before and after persons, before and after witnesses. And that's people who knew the person before the accident and people who know the person after the accident that are helping to take care of their problems.
Well, how is that factored into recovery, though, in terms of monetary recovery?
Well,
is there much weight given that by, like, for example, if you're claiming against or seeking recovery from the insurance companies? Is there much weight given to that factor?
I think juries do, because I think here's what happens.
You have to really go to a jury question on that.
Well, I think what it does is it gives you power when you're dealing with the adjuster. You have to go to a jury, but when the adjuster sees you've got lay personnel, you've got people in this person's life who have witnessed and seen what they're going through and are willing to come up and say it, Now all of a sudden you don't have this dueling doctors of one doctor saying you're okay, one doctor saying you're not, or them calling you a phony. What you've got is you've got a great situation of you've got people who a lot of times have nothing to gain. Now, a lot of times they, you know, they're relatives and friends, but other times they're coworkers and they've got nothing to gain. They'll walk in and say, hey, we've seen this person in pain. We've seen them with their disability. We've seen them with their problems. We know what they're going through. And I think juries like that because that's giving them a picture of the truth and a window into this person's life. And adjusters, I think, consider it powerful.
I think they
do. You're really describing damages.
Right.
You know, there's something called the zone of danger doctrine that Colorado doesn't really buy into. But some states, if you're, you know, if you see someone get hurt, let's say you see your child or loved one get hit by a car, there's really no recovery for you, for you're not in the zone of danger. But if the car comes and almost hits you, knocks you down, or gets close to you, then you might be able to recover under the zone of danger doctrine.
Well, I guess what I'm really concerned with is because a lot of family members fall victim to the fact they have to do mundane tasks for the injured party, you know, like transporting them somewhere, you know, taking them to the doctors or just taking care of their basic needs.
Cook meals, clean the house, do things like that. You're right.
Things that are overlooked because they're just average kind of tasks, but they're exacerbated by the fact you're doing it for another person who cannot help or contribute.
We don't overlook them, Martin. I'm going to tell you, Martin, we have in our office and we have a packet that we give people to go over what hurts them to do and what they can't do as a result of the accident that goes through every single one of those elements that you're talking about. It talks about how they travel. It talks about what they can do in life, what they can do around the house, what they can do in the cleaning, what they can do in all the different things.
And it becomes a quality of life question.
Oh, it becomes a huge quality of life question. And once again, the people who are doing it for them. Now, if those people are charging a fair rate, you can get compensation for it. If they're doing it as a volunteer work, then there's no compensation. Because the law pretty much shows that, you know, for instance, if you have people in your church group that are coming over and doing it as a volunteer, there's no compensation. If you have relatives doing it voluntarily, there's no compensation.
Yeah, it's kind of hard to, you know, have your elderly mother submit a bill.
Yeah, you don't charge them. You know, she doesn't charge you.
Yeah, but it's part of the family.
But on the reverse side, if it's professional coming in, a professional cleaning service or a professional cooking service, then you're gonna pass that bill on. But the thing is, those people stand as great credibility. They give you great information, and they're very important. And you know what? They can substantiate and tell you people have been hurt, Martin.
So they become credible witnesses.
You betcha. Hey, Martin, we got to go to break. You got something planned good for the 4th?
No.
Go out there and watch some fireworks, buddy.
Where do you guys live? I am coming over.
I'm going to be at the Down of the Denver Outlaws. You're welcome. Buy a ticket.
Bob, where do you live?
Come down and watch.
Unincorporated Arapahoe County. We get
care.
Fireworks.
You take care,
take
buddy.
Care,
thanks for calling the Bell and Paul Kligel Show. We're here to take care of your questions, to answer your questions. You can call us at 303-713-8255. In Steamboat Springs, it's 970-457-1009. Once again, that number, 303-713-8255. Give us a call. We'll be right back. What's better? 4th of July weekend, some great music. Welcome back to the Bell and Paul Legal Show. We're here to talk to you about your questions, your legal questions. Any legal question you got, we'll try and get you on the phone. If we can't solve your problem on the phone right here on the station, then we'll take your name and number. We'll call you with lawyers during the week, talk to you. If you have any personal injury questions, you've been hurt, call us here. Call us at our office, 303-795-5900. You can call us at the station today at 303-713-8255. That's 303-713-8255. And you're listening to Steamboat. Call us at 970-457-1009. Well, fireworks going to be going off. Folks, remember, there's a basic rule. What's the basic rule, Bob?
If it explodes or flies, leaves the ground, it's illegal.
It's illegal. It's not legal. You can be cited. It's going to cost you hundreds of dollars. You're not going to enjoy it. It's going to be tough. You're going to end out in court. And if you keep doing it, it can lead to a felony. Let's talk to Paul. Paul, you got a question about a drug liability case.
Yes, sir.
How you doing, bud?
Today I'm doing okay.
Okay.
I was given an antibiotic for an infection I picked up in the hospital, and it had a terrible side effect, and I'm still suffering from it. And I don't know if there's any kind of liability that the drug manufacturer would have for this.
Sure. First of all, you were given it while you were in the hospital. Were you recovering from a surgery? Or I don't want to get too much into your medical condition, but
I got a surgery in a hospital, and from that surgery, I picked up an infection.
Okay. Probably some type of staph infection within the hospital itself.
It's something called Pseudomonas, and the only way they could treat it is through an intravenous treatment. And I was not told that there could be a debilitating side effect from that. And I discovered only when they withdrew the catheter from my arm that I started feeling it. And immediately I told the doctor I had this terrible ringing in my ears from this as soon as he withdrew the catheter. And he said, oh, don't worry about it. You'll be okay in a couple of weeks. It'll go away. And now I've come to learn that it's probably a lifelong disability.
Oh, no.
It's not just ringing in the ears. It's a balance condition. I have no sense of balance anymore. Everywhere I go, I stagger and wobble and I'm in fear of falling down.
Oh, okay.
And I don't know if there's anything that can be done medically or even to prove it medically. I'd have to undergo an autopsy so that they could examine the cilia in the semicircular canals in the inner ear. That's the only thing I know that can definitively show that this is the case in my case.
On this drug, Paul, have you researched it, and does it say that side effects can be the side effects you're experiencing?
Yes, absolutely.
Go ahead, Ben.
I first found out about it, that it's a side effect of this drug, when I went to physical therapy.
Okay.
And the physical therapist told me right off that it was a side effect of this drug. So I went ahead and researched it further, and I've been through other physical therapies, and they've all told me the same thing. And, in fact, I've had doctors tell me the same thing. It seemed to be widely known in the medical community.
How long ago was the drug administered, Paul?
I'm sorry, say again?
How long ago was the drug administered?
August of 2014.
August of 2014?
Yes.
Okay.
What's the drug?
Gentamicin.
Okay. I want to talk to you a little bit. Whereabouts it says you live in Aurora, Paul?
Yes.
Have you talked to any attorneys prior to this about this thing?
Yes, I did. And apparently there was some kind of misunderstanding. I spoke with one attorney who reviewed the case, and he was really looking at it from a perspective of, was the drug properly administered? And he determined that the drug was properly administered, but it's definitely a side effect of this drug. As far as actually giving me the drug for the condition, yes, apparently it's widely prescribed drug for this condition. But, you know, the funny thing is I have found a website where it's kind of a self-help organization.
Right.
Where people who are affected by this condition get together and discuss, you know, exactly what happened to them and how they cope with their lives now.
Well, I'm a little concerned about the responsibility of giving you some information before the drug's being administered, giving you the choice to determine whether or not you should be taking the drug and whether or not you want to withstand or whether or not you want to take those gambles. For those side effects. You said the attorney did determine that the drug was properly administered. That was one of the questions I was having as we were talking.
Yes.
You recognize that on a case like this, your statute of limitations is 2 years. So you're coming up on a statute of limitations situation. Did the attorney give you back the file or his entire file?
Yes, I have the entire file.
All right. I'd like to look at it. I'd like to have our office look at it and see what we can do to help you. Did he get your medical records while he was at it?
Yes.
Okay. So you've got your medical records, you've got the file, you've got the drugs, usually these things come with a package insert. They explain, it sounds like the doctor already knew what the side effects were. And so the question is the doctor's administering this. It doesn't sound like the doctor gave you the opportunity to understand what was being administered and what the potential effects would be.
That would be a possibility because he did tell me when the first side effect I felt from this was a ringing of the ears. He said, "Oh, don't worry about it. It'll go away in a couple of weeks." Now I'm led to believe from other sources that it's going to be a lifetime.
Yeah, see, the thing is, he's telling you after it's happened. He's not telling you before. He's administering it, saying, "Okay, we're going to do this." Now, obviously, if this was a required drug and it's saving your life, and there's no other alternative, there could be some decisions that were properly made. I'm not going to criticize the doctor at this point or anybody else, but the healthcare provider, when they're giving you something that could have these long-term consequences, probably should be talking to you about these things.
Right. Actually, he did say there was another drug that could be administered, but I have an allergy to it.
Okay. So you weren't going to be able to take that either.
So he told me not to take that one. Right.
But is he telling you all this after the fact?
Pretty much, yes. The alternative drug he told me about before the fact.
Okay.
And I knew I couldn't take that drug, so I said, yeah, go ahead and administer the other one. Because it wasn't life-threatening at the time, but he said if this infection got into my bloodstream, it would cause sepsis, which could very easily lead to death.
Absolutely. Absolutely. Well, what I want to do is I'm gonna put you on hold. We're going to get your name and number, call you off the air this week, get you in, have you bring your whole file, take a look at it, see a second opinion. Never hurts to have a second opinion. Have you had a second opinion on the case?
Negative.
Okay, good. Let's bring it in and get you your second opinion and give you a chance to make some other informed decisions, all right?
Sounds like a great plan.
Okay, so you're going to go on hold. Kevin's going to get your name and number, and you'll get a call this week, all right?
Thank you so much.
Thank you. You're listening to the Bell and Pollock Legal Show. You can call us at 303-713-8255. That's 303-713-8255. Now, you know, we're waiting for your calls, but in the meantime, let's talk a little bit about fireworks, just for a second. I want everybody to understand that you're responsible if you light somebody's house on fire. You're responsible if somebody gets hurt from your use of the fireworks. You've got some problems. So you've got to be able to watch what's happening while you're using fireworks. And, you know, Bob gave you the rule of thumb. If it leaves the ground or if it explodes, it's illegal in Colorado.
And that includes even firecrackers, even little snakes probably shouldn't be used in Colorado.
Right, and I want you to be careful.
In Denver, they have a complete ban on fireworks. If you want fireworks, go see, go to one of these baseball games or the Outlaws and these organized fireworks shows. Lots of communities in Denver have them this weekend.
That's right. You've got to look at that kind of stuff and figure out what's happening. But you got to understand also, there's some other places where they're illegal. For instance, Aurora. All fireworks are illegal, folks. Boulder, all fireworks are illegal. So you've got to watch. You've got to watch where you're shooting them off. In Brighton, it's my understanding that fireworks that do not explode or leave the ground or fly through the air are permissible. In Centennial, fireworks that do not explode, leave the ground, or fly through the air are permissible. But places like Lafayette, fireworks are illegal. Lakewood, they're illegal. Thornton, they're illegal. Pay attention to this.
In Denver, they're illegal, and if you a violation, you get up to a year in jail, $999.
Listen to that. Fines. A year in jail, $999. You got to pay attention. You do not want to be firing off fireworks that are going to get you in trouble. Now, fortunately, we've had some rain. It's going to be wet, so we have less of a chance that we're going to blow people or we're going to burn people's houses or their fences or damage too much property. But it's still, if it's illegal, don't do it. It's going to cost you a lot of money.
Watch out. I mean, those sparklers burn at 1,200 degrees. Don't let your kids be playing with sparklers. You know, you can burn their hands, burn their bodies, burn somebody else. So be careful with fireworks.
You're listening to the Bell and Pollock Legal Show. We're going to take a short break, and we'll be right back. Don't you think you want someone to talk to? Lay down, sell it for freedom, and they can't take that away. And I'm proud to be an American, where at least I know I'm free. And I won't forget the men who died. Welcome back to the Bell and Pollock Legal Show. Brad Pollock, Bob Leonard in studio today. You can call us at 303-713-8255. Lines are open. Steamboat Springs, 970-457-1009. Any legal question you've got, give us a call. We're happy to talk to you, discuss it with you, go through it. Right now, we're going to talk to Eric over at Caitlin's. Eric, how's it going over there?
We're doing great. How are you?
Good. You got those red, white, and blue pancakes ready to go?
Absolutely. They're filled with fresh raspberries, blueberries, and white chocolate chip. The red, white, and blue pancakes are ready to go, and they're made from scratch.
That's fantastic. Those pancakes are good without anything, so adding that on is going to make them really, really sweet and decadent.
Absolutely. And we got a couple specials to run by you guys for the week. Our breakfast special is going to be the breakfast quesadilla. It's probably going to be the next thing that goes on the permanent menu. It's 2 6-inch white flour tortillas with shredded cheese, scrambled eggs, your choice of ham, bacon, or sausage. That comes with lettuce, tomato, guac, and sour cream. That's our breakfast special for the week. And then our lunch special is going to be the All-American Cheeseburger. We're going to serve that with a Southern-style potato salad. Really, really good stuff. We also got Coke floats. And we don't forget, on Mondays and Fridays from 11 to 2, it's all-you-can-eat taco and burrito buffet. It's all-you-can-eat. It's only $7.99. That actually includes a non-alcoholic beverage in the price. You cannot beat that. And the deck's not exactly open, but the bottomless mimosas are. So they're only $10. Come on down, check us out, come and see us.
Sounds great, Eric. We're going to be down there. Yeah, probably be a little busy for the 4th, but a lot of people are going to be out there seeing those fireworks. No place to go today, though. It's too wet.
Hey, no, come and see us. Come and hang out. We got scratch-made red and green chili, buttermilk pancakes, all you can ask for.
Okay. I'll see you down there.
You got it. Now, we're at 4379 East Mississippi Avenue. That's one block east of Colorado Boulevard, and that's the Glendale Shopping Center.
Hey, Eric, do you have any gluten-free options?
I don't have gluten-free, but we are working on that. That has been a popular request, and we're trying to get that done.
You got to do that. Bob can't come down there and eat without
gluten-free. I know your green chili's gluten-free.
No, it's not.
Oh, you told me it was.
No, I'm trying to work on it. I'm trying to make a recipe with the gluten-free. It just doesn't quite taste the same, but I'm trying to get that down.
All right, buddy.
Thanks, guys.
Take care. Thank you. Get down to Caitlin's, folks. It's great. You're going to love it. It's something you'll love every bite of the way. They've got great food. They've been down there for over 10 years now, and it's good food, and you're going to enjoy it. Listen, we're Bell and Pollock. We're the Bell and Pollock Legal Show. You can call us at 303-713-8255. That's 303-713-8255 or 970-457-1009. Call us. Feel free to talk to us. Yesterday, we did a show, part one, that's going to air on Sunday mornings. But Rob Brovich and I did it concerning workers' comp. It's something important for you to understand and know about, and how workers' comp works with your car cases and your car crashes and what you can and can't do in workers' comp. That's going to air at 7:30 tomorrow morning at 92.5 The Wolf, Cool 105, or at Mix 100. Listen to any one of those stations, and you'll be able to hear the pre-recorded show. It's going to be a two-week show, but if you get hurt on the job, and with what's going on lately with construction and the increase in construction, you've got a good chance that there's going to be injuries on the job that have to be taken care of. And Bob, generally, when you get hurt on the job, What do you do?
Well, the first thing is you got to report it to your supervisor in a timely manner. If you don't do that, you could lose some of your benefits.
So listen to that. I know a lot of you think, maybe it'll go away. Maybe it will. It's not a big deal. Report it. I know a lot of you think, I can get fired. Can you get fired for reporting an injury on the job?
No, you can't get fired. And if you don't report it, you lose your benefits. But, you know, they're not going to fire you. They shouldn't fire you. It's illegal if they fire you for being injured on the job.
Listen, work comp benefits are important benefits. One of the important parts about work comp is you're at work comp and you're able to collect benefits without regard to fault. Doesn't matter how you got hurt.
You know, that's why they have work comp system in the past. I were talking 100 years ago when they first started the work comp system. In fact, Colorado has one of the oldest work comp systems in the United States. You had to sue your employer to prove liability. As a compromise, to develop the work comp system. It's not the best system in the world, but it works. You know, it gives you some income. It helps you pay your medical bills. And, you know, if you have it available to you, and every employer in the state of Colorado is required to carry work comp. If they don't, they could be subject to all sorts of penalties and fines.
There's a lot of forms involved in the work comp system. Make sure you fill them out. But if you've got an injury, and this isn't just an injury, it can be an illness. It can be something that you believe from being exposed to something that's made you sick. Then you got to address it, right, Bob?
Right. Exposure to toxic chemicals. You end up with a respiratory problem, a carpal tunnel. If you have repetitive motion problems, are all covered by work comp. You know, you have to be off the job for at least 3 pay periods before work comp kicks in. And just remember, the statute of limitations is 2 years. When you have to file with the state. So generally you have two parts of it. There's the insurance company and then there's the state. But you have 2 years to file your work comp claim with the state. If your employer doesn't want to file a claim, you need to come see us. We can review your case and we can tell you if we need to file a claim with the state or not.
So when you go to that employer, and we talk about some of this tomorrow on the show, but some of it we didn't cover. And when you go to that employer, when you first feel an injury, when you first feel your back pulled or a tweak or a problem with your back, or you feel a neck injury, or you feel some kind of injury, get to the employer and tell them. That's the first thing. They're going to tell you, and they're going to give you some doctors you can go see. Go see them. This is part of the work comp system. And now, Bob, you said they can go see him immediately. They don't have to wait 3 days.
No. But in order to file a claim with the state of Colorado, you have to be off like 3 pay periods. So if you're seeing a doctor and you're off for multiple time, you lose time from work and it adds up to 3 pay periods, you probably can file a claim with the state. If you have a permanent injury, in other words, if you cut your finger or, you know, injure a limb, then they need to be filing with the state of Colorado application for, you know, workers' comp benefits. The word is compensability, which means that it has to be related to something on the job. In other words, if you just fall down, even if you fall down the stairs at work, it could be work comp.
It doesn't have to be a dangerous condition. It doesn't have to be something where somebody was negligent. It doesn't have to be something where somebody did something wrong. It's without regard.
Right. So you could be walking down the hallway and trip. And it could possibly become a work comp claim.
They do have questions about whether or not you're actually on the job, but I want to explain to you, you know, if you've got, for instance, if you work someplace and they've got the parking lot across the street, or if you're downtown and they've got a parking lot you're instructed to park in, and you have to park there, and you go and park there, and then you're on your way into work, chances are you're covered for work comp. If you fall, if it's icy, if there's an injury in the parking lot.
You know, if you're outside, let's say you're traveling, a salesperson, or you see clients at their home. If you're driving, you get in a car accident, it could be covered by work comp. There's a possibility there could be 2 recoveries. If you're driving down the road and you're on the job seeing a client and you get in a car accident, not only do you get the work comp benefits from the state, but you also could file a third-party claim against the driver for negligence.
Let's talk to Bill in Colorado Springs. He has a question about recourse. Bill, what's going on today?
My son had a DNR.
Okay.
And he's in surgery, and they went ahead and resuscitated him anyway. And he did not want to be resuscitated.
Okay. Normally, the first question that's going to be asked, and it's a big question, is did they know not to resuscitate?
Yes, they knew, and they even called his mother, who was his point of contact, and she also agreed to enforce the DNR, and they went ahead and did it anyway.
What's the was this at the hospital? You're in Colorado Springs. Is the Penrose Hospital down there?
In surgery.
I'm sorry. Is it the Penrose Hospital down there? Okay. What's the reason they gave you for their resuscitation?
They didn't give a reason.
And has anybody addressed with them the fact that there was a DNR?
This is my son and his mother, and they live out of state. They live in Indiana.
Oh, so it didn't happen in Colorado Springs. I'm sorry.
And I don't know all those details, but I know they told me about it, and they did complain. They didn't officially complain to the hospital, but they did, comment to them that, why did you do that? And they didn't get any answer.
All right. And what you said it's a hospital in Minnesota?
No, it's in Indiana University.
Indiana. Okay. Let me... Okay, it's very strange that they knew about it and they ignored it.
Well, it could be the question any place, okay?
Yeah.
No matter where it was, the question is if you have DNR and they know about it and they go ahead and resuscitate you. I've heard about this happening at Penrose Hospital, but because they have a little bit different attitude towards things, I understand. But my question is do you have any recourse?
There can be recourse. So how's your son?
How's my son?
Yeah.
Very depressed about being alive.
Okay. All right. Can you hold with us over the break? We got to take a break right now. Hold with us, okay?
Yep.
All right. We're going to talk to you right after the break. You're listening to the Bell and Pollock Legal Show, the only show of its kind. You can call us at 303-713-8255. We're going to take a short break. We'll be right back. Welcome back to the Bell and Pollock Legal Show, 303-713-8255. Brad Pollock, Bob Leonard in the studio. We're going to go straight with the phones, talk to Bill. Bill, you have a son, Indiana Hospital. Do not resuscitate. Doctors appear to have ignored it and resuscitated anyway. Every state has its own laws. We're Colorado lawyers.
Okay, hypothetical, okay? It was in Colorado. Let's get past that.
It's probably
DNR
malpractice.
DNR, okay?
It's probably malpractice, Bill.
Really?
Yes, and there can be liability and there can be responsibility. I want to explain to you that courts are reluctant and sometimes juries can be reluctant to penalize or to do anything against a doctor who saves somebody's life. And
they don't want their life saved.
That's exactly it. And DNRs are legal. They're to be followed. It's the responsibility of the doctors to follow it. Now, without knowing their side and why they did it and what happens. Now, hearing your side, though, I'm telling you, you need an Indiana lawyer to look into it. And there could be some consequences to this, not just because your son's because he's depressed that he's alive, but additional expenses, additional fees and medical bills that might be experienced dealing with your son's depression and dealing with your son's situation could be the responsibility of that doctor or that hospital.
Let me ask a little bit different question. His mother and I both have life insurance policies on him. Are we the injured party?
Could be. Could very well be. The question is going to be... And a lot of that's going to be the question of, is it a delayed recovery? Is there a delayed income? How old is your son?
47.
Yeah. And so, your son could be now that it could be a huge expense to you and a great deal of loss.
He's had surgery over 300 times.
You experience. And that's one of the things they're going to look at. They're going to say, well, is your son headed for death anyway?
No right arm, no right leg, no left leg. And he's got one finger, pinky on his left hand.
Is he suffering from diabetes or?
No.
Okay.
It's a congenital situation called CIPA.
Okay. What's the life expectancy he's got right now?
He wasn't supposed to get out of his teens.
Okay. And how old is he?
47.
Is it one of those where that even now they're saying any time, any day, and he could die?
Well, anybody could die any time, any day.
Oh, no, but I mean that they're saying his life expectancy is that short?
He's not terminal illness. Okay. He does have a DNR, and he does have some of the paper. I can't remember what it was, but he's signed up for hospice and stuff like that. So.
Well, I think it's time we get you. Have you talked to an Indiana lawyer out there?
No, I haven't. I'm not sure that his mother and he are the same mind of this that I am.
Well, we got to get you contact with an Indiana lawyer. You've got to get
you. They're going to want $5,000.
Well, let's sit down and talk. We can work with you through our firm and try and help you with this, okay?
Okay.
I think that you have a valid case, and I think you have a valid complaint. And
the DNR, has it ever been tested in court this way?
I don't know of it ever being tested in court in Colorado. In Colorado. You know, you got the Terry Schiavo case, of course. You understand
there are cases
out there where there's been questions about resuscitating and do not resuscitate and who's held responsible and who's not. And I believe, and Bob, you can put your in here, I believe that this is medical malpractice.
Yeah, I think it's medical malpractice. How long ago did this happen?
It's about 6 months now.
Was this the first time, or they've done it resuscitating before?
I'm sorry?
Was this the first time they resuscitated him?
No, it's the third time, but it's the first time since he had the DNR.
The DNR. So this is even more specific and exact that they should not have done this.
Yeah.
Okay. I'm going to put you on hold. I mean, we're going to talk this weekend, and our office will help you, and we'll get a hold of an Indiana law firm.
I've got to talk to Indiana and get more specifics about it, but that's... I talked to my son. That's what he told me. So.
Well, give us your name and number, and let's talk and get all the specifics and make sure we take care of you. All right.
Another quick one, if you don't mind.
Sure.
I've got your book on pedestrians and crosswalks and all that kind of stuff.
Right.
What if you're making a right-hand turn on red and the pedestrian is walking against the light over your right shoulder?
If the pedestrian is walking against the light, now and then you're going to be protected by making a right turn on red. Now, understand, when you get the right turn on red and you stop, you're supposed to make sure that intersection is clear before you make that right turn.
It is, but this person is walking off the curb behind my right shoulder.
Right. Normally, if the pedestrian...
And do I have to check back a block to see if there's any pedestrians there?
Well, that's exactly it. Normally, if the pedestrian's walking against the light, the pedestrian loses protections. And the pedestrian is going to not have much of a case.
Even if they're in a crosswalk.
Even if they're in a crosswalk. They're outside. You know, they may be in the crosswalk, but they're not supposed to be out in the road to begin with.
Well, that's my point. They're walking against the light. So
yeah. So
that's the issue. Okay.
So that's where they run into a problem.
Because I had one that was turning right on red, and it was at night, and the guy on a bicycle even was going really fast, and he came over my right shoulder and went right off the sidewalk and right through the intersection. And I just really almost nailed him. This has happened several times recently. That's why I'm asking.
Well, that's why we a lot of times when we talk about the pedestrian cases and we have shows on that, we say to the pedestrians, you must follow the law. Bicyclists, you are subject to the law. You must, must follow it.
Really, aren't they?
Right. They're supposed to follow it. And if they don't follow it,
they're on the sidewalk, are they?
They're going to be in trouble. Well, they're not supposed to be on the sidewalk unless there is ordinances allow it. But normally, they're not supposed to be on that sidewalk.
What if they're in a bike lane?
In a bike lane, they're all right. But once again,
if they run a red light?
If they have a stoplight, they have to obey the laws.
Well, they're considered vehicles just like a car.
That's right.
I'm sorry?
They're considered a vehicle just like a car.
Yeah, but, you know... acting like this, who's going to get hurt? But they're the person that's wrong, but, you know, it's going to feel bad about the person that nails them, too. So.
Yeah, it goes both ways. Motorcyclists face the same thing. I've been a motorcyclist for years, and let me tell you, we face the same thing. We've got the laws. We got to follow them, and normally if we break them and it ends out in a crash, we're going to get hurt.
I've got a friend that calls people on motorcycles who don't wear helmets, organ donors.
I always wear a helmet.
Yep.
Okay, let me take your call.
Okay.
We'll talk to you. You're listening to the Bell and Paul Kliegel Show. We're going to stay right with the phones. We're going to go to Frank. Frank, you have a question about death or dead after death?
Well, yeah, actually, I'm filling out a collection of personal property by affidavit and just wondering, this is for my brother who died last week. Would I be responsible for any of his debts?
Well, did he leave a will?
No.
Okay. So, and is it in the state of Colorado?
Yes, it's in Denver.
All right. Normally what's supposed to happen is when you collect personal property, the assets of the estate, and these are assets of the estate, are supposed to be used to satisfy debt to begin with. Okay, legal and appropriate debts and creditors. Normally it starts with any money spent with burial expenses and that kind of stuff, funeral home.
Okay, that has the first priority?
Usually that has the first priority.
Okay.
Okay, then what's going to happen is that there's a time period, and it's going to depend on whether or not you publish your brother's death or not, as to when other creditors can come forth and make a claim against the estate, if there's any assets in the estate. Okay?
There's less than $100 in the checking account.
Now, if there's no assets, and when you have the personal property, if there's no real value in the personal property, then no, you're not going to have to worry about it. Frank, that's our music. We got to go. Can I get your number and call you off the air and give you more information?
Sure.
All right. We're going to put you on hold. We're going to talk to you later. Thank you for calling the Bell and Polk Legal Show. We appreciate doing this show. It's something that we enjoy doing, and we hope it helps you. We hope that you benefit from it, not only calling when you have questions, but also listening to others' questions. It's going to be the 4th of July all weekend, folks. There's going to be fireworks all the time. It's going to be a hectic weekend. Please stay safe. Please make sure that you're not hurt by any of the fireworks. You're not hurt anybody with your fireworks. And please don't drink and drive. For those of you who do, if you've been hurt by a drunk driver, give us a call. We'll help you. We'll see you next week. And stay safe.
Enjoy the fireworks.
Fourth.